Admittedly, there are many paths a sermon on this gospel reading could take. Off the dome, there are four different, very intense moments that could each be their own sermon. There is the stranger performing exorcisms. There is the drowning of oneself with a millstone. There is cutting off of various limbs. And then the business about salt and fire. When this is the case in preaching, I actually find it helpful to zoom out and get a better sense of how we got to such an intense place. Intrepid observers may have already realized that today's gospel actually picks up right where last week's left off. John's piece of dialogue picks up right after Jesus' remark about welcoming children from last week, which is not actually that easy to catch if you are not paying close attention to the verse numbers. Our reading starts with what is arguably an interruption of a longer speech from Jesus. This seems particularly true because his speech that spans last week's and this week's readings appears in uninterrupted form in the Gospel of Matthew without John's interruption about the exorcist. Here I will say that throughout my biblical studies, I have developed a favorite group of characters. The disciples of Jesus across all the Gospels are by far my favorite characters, for many reasons, but one stands head and shoulders above the rest. They are almost constantly wrong. In so many instances, at least one disciple is misunderstanding, misinterpreting, or acting out of turn in the Gospels. And we have a prime example of this in John's interruption in today's reading. To me, it appears almost comical for John to stop Jesus in the middle of this speech about welcoming children, not overlooking them, and helping them in their faith, to tell him about something that probably could have just waited until after he was done. Not only is John sort of acting out of turn in his interruption of Jesus, but his acting out of turn is compounded by what he interrupts to tell Jesus about. The disciples have stopped a strange man from performing exorcisms in the name of Jesus. When I use the word strange, I don't mean this man was particularly weird. That's not in the text. I mean strange as in stranger. To which Jesus informs them that they have actually missed the point entirely. Stopping someone doing good works is not part of the plan. And creating both a divide in that the man is not one of us, and a hierarchy in that we get to decide who gets to do what things, is also not part of the plan. After this whole interruption, we get back to Jesus' speech or introduction, you know. We get to the good stuff where Jesus gets to finish his speech with the millstone, the drowning, the limb cutting, and the salt and fire business. Welcome the children, do not cause them to stumble. Do not let yourselves stumble, and be at peace with one another. All pretty easy enough, all pretty cut and dry. But what does stumbling actually mean? And really, why keep this interruption in this gospel when they got rid of it in Matthew? There are, in fact, about 7 other times in the Gospel of Mark where demons are cast out, and such a remark would have been more natural in any one of those places. The gospel writers could have taken this into account when writing it down and made a minor editorial choice to make things flow better. I suspect the interruption is not actually an interruption in the end. The actions of John, I would say, are a pretty clear-cut example of causing one to stumble in the way that he stops the man from performing exorcisms, which is a good deed, by the way. It's important to bear in mind that exorcisms in the ancient world were life-restoring acts, not the Emily Rose situations we might think of today. Also, I think John's actions are even what it means to stumble for oneself. In stopping this man from performing his exorcisms, John has set himself up as someone with the power to decide what should happen and who should get to do it, and he has created an exclusive group of Christ followers. To return to the question then, to stumble is not to do something bad or something that is against the law, though those are likely included or may be included, and I would not say Jesus wants us to do bad things. Rather, stumbling seems to have a few different definitions depending on the person and the situation. To stumble might be to be stopped in your faith, like the exorcist, or to create division in the community, or to think so highly of yourself as to stop someone else in their faith. The after effects of stumbling should not be taken lightly either. And I suspect the warning from Jesus is so grave, not because God looks for our self-mutilation or our pain, but because these kinds of things are so easy to fall into, or to stumble into, to use a different phrasing. By thinking highly of ourselves, and by creating divisions where there should be unity, and by creating hierarchy, we reject the need for our togetherness. We reject the command that Jesus gives at the end of this week's gospel lesson, to have peace among ourselves. I think the warning is stark because the presumption that we are right and that we know better, the pride that we should be able to handle things ourselves in our own groups, and the assumption that we should tell that strange guy to stop doing exorcisms are all such incredibly easy things to do. As Christians, it seems that this story would call us to get off of whatever high horse we may be on and stay off it. It is a call to seek out a way to end divisions, to include those whom we might otherwise exclude, and to rid ourselves of the assumptions that we are the ones who know best. One example that comes to mind as a huge church nerd is the fact that the Episcopal Church and the Methodist Church have finally decided that unity is more important than our own sense of self-importance. This past summer, the Methodist Church voted to enter into full communion with the Episcopal Church, and our vote to affirm that is expected the next time we convene. What this does in short terms is it recognizes the validity of the other denomination and allows adherents of both denominations to work together without fear of reprisal from their respective denominational authorities. It's very cool if you're a church nerd and represents, you know, both churches getting off of their high horses. As people, the call of the story would seem to be into a sense of unity and togetherness, to think that we actually do want the stranger performing exorcisms to keep doing exactly that, to think that we actually should not endeavor to do our lives, work, and ministry by ourselves or in our exclusive clubs. This is echoed in our readings outside of the gospel today. God's solution when Moses complains about the burdens of leadership and the hardship of the desert is not to give Moses more power, nor is it to tell Moses to buck up. God's solution and God's involvement in the life of Moses is to give him more people to do the good work with him. In James's letter, he does not tell the people to anoint themselves or to pray for themselves or to help themselves out of their own sinful ways. The solution that James understands for the problems of his community is the unity of people in their faith. So it seems that stumbling is not such an easy act to define, and is clearly seen only in what seems to be an interruption. When we exclude those who are doing good work, we stumble. When we think of ourselves too proud to include the exorcist we do not know, we stumble. When we overlook the children and the little ones in our midst, we stumble. When we act out of our own sense of importance and impede others, we stumble. The solution is never to divide and exclude, nor to assume that we will make it on our own, without the exorcist, without the additional prophets, without each other. God's solution to Moses is togetherness, and God's desire in Mark is for unity. Nowhere is the final blessing we hear in our services more needed than in these moments of stumbling. Be swift to love and make haste to be kind. To the strange exorcist, be swift to love. To the little ones who believe in Jesus, be kind. And have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. In the name of the one who loved us first.